The bars are going up, going up. Bars are going up, na 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 na. The bars are going up, going up. Bars are going up.
Hello and welcome to the Late Kickoff Football Podcast. In the weekend, Aberdeen strengthened their grip on third in the Premiership with their seventh victory in eight games, and Dunfermline Athletic were crowned League One champions with their biggest divisional win in 7 years. I'm Jamie Guyon, joined as ever by Mike Wood. Mike, how you doing?
No, I'm tremendous. Falkirk got beat tonight, so I'm even in a more jubilant mood than usual.
Fantastic. It's all falling apart for the Bairds yet again. Also joining us is Sheila. Sheila, how you doing?
Hey, I'm much the same. Eh? It's always good to see Falkirk get beat. And, still on the come down for the weekend. So, reasons to be chuffed.
And how are you, Jamie?
I'm fantastic. Thank you very much for asking, actually. I really appreciate that. I'm fantastic.
The only reason I didn't ask is Mike normally asks in his intro.
I'm absolutely grand. We'll come on to Aberdeen shortly, but there is only one place to start this week, and that's with Dunfermline Athletics. Championship winning victory at the weekend, 5-0 against Queen of the South. Mike, you had said last week that Queens were in form and it was going to be by no means an easy victory for Dunfermline. It's almost as if they heard you and said, hold my beer, boys. We're going to see to this. It was emphatic. It must have been an absolutely brilliant day, given that at no point was there ever any real nerves about the outcome.
No, it was sunny, it was warm for once this year. So obviously got the nice weather for it. And yeah, Dunfermline got the traps for once at home. They've been prolific slow starters this season. So to go 2-0 up at half time and then just sail away with it in the second half. Like I said, it's the biggest win in the league in 7 years. So to top what you've done previously on course for the biggest points tally since, I think, was it Gretna or Livingston or Rangers, one of the three, I think, in League One. Everything's going rosy at the moment at Dunfermline, so you can't have no complaints with what they did against what was at the time and going into that game a good Queen of the South side, like you said.
Fantastic. There's very few better places, I'd argue, in Europe than East End Park on a sunny day. You've got the graveyard to the left and Quick Fit to the right. It's really is a sight to behold. I think, was that, Mike, also the 21st game in their unbeaten run? Is that a club record?
Yeah, so took over Bert Payton's 95-96 team, which spanned, I think, two across two seasons. But yeah, they were 20 unbeaten, so 21, and to do that within a season as well, to bounce back from that league defeat in Montrose. Had a few scrapes along the way, like Falkirk were 2-0 up, Airdrie were 3-0 up, and to keep that unbeaten run going, keeping that momentum going, I suppose. Tremendous. You can't fault James McPake for much this season. I think the only minor bugbear you could have is the amount of goals scored at home and the amount of wins at home have not been exceptional for a League One winning side. But if that's the only bugbear that you can have, that you don't win enough at home or by a big enough margin, then you're... Yeah, this year heading into Celtic and Rangers morning face territory there. So, yeah, kind of little complaints about how things are going at the moment.
Absolutely. Sheila, I asked you in the week if winning League One was exciting. Was it, if it was something that as a Pars fan that you got excited about, that you'll put down in your sort of list of top Pars memories, and you wouldn't necessarily put it there, but it's still good just to get another league win and to have done it first time of asking as well.
Yeah, of course. I mean, the actual, like, the level of the championship is kind of the bugbear I can have, is the fact that we probably shouldn't be there. Other than, you know, the unmitigated disaster that was last season. But the worst thing that can happen is obviously you're down there for more than one season. Obviously, Falkirk know what that's like. There's nothing to say that they're even going to get through the playoffs either. So, more likely that they'll be down for another season. It's good in that sense that, you know, we're back where we should be in terms of what league we're playing in. But yeah, like I said, we had a I wouldn't say it was heated, but like a fairly back and forth debate with a friend of the show, Grant, about, you know, what the objectives for being next season. And I was quite happy. So if we can just stay in the league next year, I'll be chuffed. And then we can maybe kick on more so from there. But given the way that McPake set up the side, in the sense that they don't concede many goals and quite dogged, that, you know, we're not that many dynamic attacking players for being, you know, in line for a promotion push, because that can happen. And, you know, a 10-team league, you could be, I think it was our pal Jimmy said that you could be in a in a promotion battle and a relegation battle at the same time. So I can't complain, really. Just happy to get through the season as champions, and we could maybe get rid of some of the dross that we've carried over from last season and give McPake a proper opportunity to get his stamp on the team in an attacking sense.
Yeah, absolutely. But defensively, Mike, it's been super impressive. Sorry, I can't remember if it was a tweet or if you said it on That's Never 10 Yards podcast, but even if Dunfermline hadn't scored a single goal this season, they wouldn't be in the relegation zone because of how good
they're... Yeah, on goal difference, they'd be above Clyde, 20 clean sheets, just taking the points earned in their 21 game unbeaten run. There's been 33 games played so far. Those 49 points just from this unbeaten run would put us in fifth position as well. I don't think it's been a vintage League One campaign by many teams. I do think there is decent quality teams and teams that could definitely push for a championship spot in the playoffs there. I don't think there'll be a golf in talent within whoever finishes ninth in the championship. But I do believe just the way that Dunfermline now go into games expecting to win them, and that change in belief, and considering the core of the team is pretty much the same, then I think you can only be happy with McPake, who came in. And I think people were maybe on the fence, not sure, because we've obviously suffered the disasters that were Peter Grant and John Hughes. But he's came in and no flashy lines, nothing eccentric. No saying you can win the league after not winning a game in the first 12, like Peter Grant famously did last season. It's just one game at a time. It's a boring approach for the media, but he's getting the job done on the field, and that's what matters at the end of the day. It doesn't matter your approach with the media, as long as results are going your way. There's not arse about or anything like that. It's just fairly...
Unless you're a 16-year-old on Twitter.
Yeah.
we all have our crosses to bear occasionally. We all have crosses to bear occasionally. But that's water under the bridge. I think we'll all agree on that one there. But look, it's been fantastic this season. It's not been the most entertaining to watch football, like maybe Alan Johnson's League One winning outfit. But I do think we're better fitted to go into the championship next season than we were under Johnson. And I think that a lot of teams that do win League One do tend to finish in the top four, such as the close proximity of the team. Like I said, you could be in a relegation battle fighting for promotion at the same time. I think that is distinctively true. You've seen Inverness just going a decent run of form there. Now they're up to third after languishing for quite a long time with injuries, and Billy does, as your manager, as a handicap to add into the equation there. I do think fourth is eminently possible, but I think they'll really need to... some top half stability would be nice for a change. I don't think we've had that since the last time we went up to the top flight, when we finished fifth, third, and then first in four consecutive seasons. Something like that would be nice for a Dunfermline fan. It's been very yo-yo in the last 12 years or so.
Yeah, absolutely. The way they're set up, you would have thought that they've got every chance next year. The Championship's probably the toughest league in Scotland, much like it is, I guess, in England, in the sense that you inevitably have one or two big teams from the Premier League that don't think they should be there. Dundee this season, possibly Dundee United, possibly Kilmarnock, possibly Ross County next season, together with sort of your classic Championship teams, your Invernesses, Partick Thistles, Wraiths, Ayres. So it is a tough league, but as we were saying, in each of the last five seasons, the winner of League One has qualified for the playoffs. So there's certainly history.
Not that Cove fucked it.
Well, no, aye, not this season, sorry. Each of the previous one. Cove sitting rock bottom has fairly put that to...
Who knew getting Paul Hartley back as a manager in the Championship would be a disaster?
Yeah, it's It's funny how they were actually doing okay. They were like largely mid-table and reasonably. They were in a unique position in the championship where they were in neither a promotion battle or a relegation battle, which is almost impossible. But Cove thought that was boring, so brought Paul Hartley back to put a change to that. What do, looking into next season, Sheila, what do Pars need to focus on? What are the areas that perhaps need rectified for a good
I think we've already said something a bit more dynamic. Attacking players would be welcome. And we've signed Craig Whitenup, who's our top scorer this year, and he's what, third in the division overall, up to a longer deal. So that's obviously very positive. Richie Holsar, who I think's on loan from, is it Dundee?
Rangers.
So,
he's on loan from Rangers B. He's on loan two divisions up.
An important distinction, I think you find.
But again, he's come on great guns, and you know he's quickly becoming a firm fan favourite because he is, you know, a bit dynamic and a bit exciting when he gets the ball as to what he's going to do. So if we can somehow keep a hold of him again, that would be a massive plus going into the next season. If we could get someone on the other wing, I'd be chuffed a bit because it would be of someone of a reasonable quality and standard that, you know, you'd have a decent front three, because I think, you know, the defence and midfield is solid if nothing else. And then you just need that little bit something extra to maybe unlock some of the tougher sort of defences in the championship. But yeah, again, like, as I've said many times this season, taking this team that Grant and Hughes systematically destroyed and then actually to get them to come together as some sort of unit, you can get rid of some of the boys that maybe outstayed their welcome. Well, that sounds very harsh, but just like not really what we're needing moving forward. So just to give you an example, probably Kevin O'Hara, who's been a decent servant to the club, but is probably taking a wage now that could be better used somewhere else in the squad. So just guys like that have been decent this season, but are not really of the level we need to really make a go of it next season. And, you know, I'm chuffed that McPake's going to get the chance to do that, and then we'll see what happens. But again, I'd be quite happy for another unglamorous but solid season next year.
Has Miller Fenton made it as the best player in the world?
Funnily enough, the man
still not played.
It was about 18 months ago that Hugh said he was going to be a very important player for the Pars.
And it just says all you need about last season. We have, like, you know, Dunfermline's answer to Maradona in the youth setup. Give him a grand total of 0 minutes and get relegated. It just says everything you need to know about, you know, the caliber of manager we had at the club last season.
Is he the one that Hugh said he looks you in the eye when he's talking to you?
Something like that. He gets the car the right way or some pitch.
So he
like
gets
that,
off the bus.
Yeah, but I guess
he's ready to sit on the bench. He's a boy that knows his role.
Desperate to sit on the bench. but he's not come through yet. But we'll just wait and see what happens. But again, I'm saying this midweek, chatting with other fans, that, you know, it's a bit unfortunate we find ourselves in this position, because it's kind of like a cycle. We've already been through all this, and now we're here again, which is disappointing as a Dunfermline supporter, like, looking long term, because we've kind of wasted the last 7 years. But again, we'll take it rather than being in a Falkirk's position right now. So,
well, absolutely, and there's far from any guarantee that Falkirk will find themselves in the Championship next season. Is the League One to Championship playoff, is that a classic semi-final and final, or is it the 4-3-3 thing? No, okay.
No, it's was it ninth place, fourth, second place, third, then the winners meet in the final.
Right. So it's not the end of the world if Falkirk now drop to third, because they've got the same game that they would have had anyway.
Funny though.
Yeah, funny.
Airdrie actually have the nod on the head-to-head So it'd be interesting if those two teams meet, and I think they will meet in the semi-finals. I think Airdrie are the most likely winners. Falkirk have only won one game since they effectively lost the title at East End Park. So 1-7 and losing against Edinburgh tonight. Edinburgh had less points than the Clyde in 2023. Let me see how far down the table Clyde is. That's worrying. Especially when Falkirk were looking decent at home recently. But as I've said before, I don't know if I've said it in this podcast right enough, but I think John McGlynn's teams get found out in the second half because he's got one way of playing. And once that's kind of been sussed, then he struggles. And I think you are seeing that now. It'll be interesting with the semi-final coming up against Inverness. If they've took the eye off the ball and thinking, well, we'll finish comfortable in the playoffs. Dunfermline did that one season when Rangers ran away with the league and Kenanbeef kept us down. So that's a dangerous game to be playing if you're thinking, putting all your eggs in one basket, believing you're in the playoffs and just hanging on to get there. It's hard to refind your form, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. Exciting times for the Pars. Three games left of the season in which they can go out and have a jolly good time, perhaps keep that unbeaten run ongoing if they're not already on the beach, although you suspect that they maybe it's a time for Miller Fenton to get a game, eh?
see
if the boy's up to it. Further up the leagues, as I alluded to, Aberdeen solidified their grip on third place in the Premiership. They're now 5 points clear of Hearts in fourth, and that's really important because it means with one game left before the split, they'll definitely go into the top six split in third place, which is, I think, psychologically quite big. Playing Rangers this weekend, not expecting to get anything out of that whatsoever. So even if Hearts do beat Ross County, which, I'd say you suspect they should, but given that they're on a, seven-game losing run, six-game losing run, then I guess nothing's a given for Hearts at the moment. And Stephen Naismith certainly didn't make his initial press conference seem any less bizarre with his follow-up press conference after the defeat to Hibs, in which he reiterated the fact that third's not that important, which I just, if you're a Hearts fan, that must be absolutely infuriating to listen to.
I suppose it's not important in the sense that Hearts finished third last season. Look at what a mess they made of it this season. So I suppose in that sense that you can just easily fuck it up. But I think it's wild, the attitudes at Tynecastle.
It's an odd, I think it's just an odd thing to say. Like, you've got rid of the manager, and the only reason you would have got rid of him is because you're less likely to get third than you were. So it seems like you should get rid of the manager to try and get third. And then you bring in an ex-player who gets rid of the most senior player in the squad, who's been the best player this season, or one of.
No, I'm not sure about that.
He's
very slow. He's very slow.
He is very slow. But a consistent player for the first team all season. But even that aside, to then keep saying third's not that important, the figures were released, last week as well, which showed Hearts had made €5 million, an additional €5 million that haven't finished third. Now, it's a bit of a sore one to lose if you don't get that this season. And I suppose I'd probably be accused of being slightly biased, but given that Aberdeen have finished in that position 8 of the last 10 seasons before this one, you would suggest that they're the team with the grip on the best of the rest title, despite what the CEO of Hearts might have tried to say a couple of times this season.
It's going to be St Mirren, and it's going to be fucking hilarious. St Mirren finished third.
But the problem was when we were finishing best of the rest, we got fuck out of show for it because we went into the first qualifying round of the Europa League, and we had to win 4 knockout ties against increasingly difficult teams, and including Kaira Almaty, which was about 15,000 miles away, led by Anatoly Timoshuk and Kazakhstan's greatest ever international, arriving at Petodre. Whereas now you go straight into a group stage, you get your €5 million and Bob's your uncle. And if there's one thing Aberdeen have done all right this past season is make some decent signings with a bit of cash. So fingers crossed that's a sign of things to come
as
well.
And you're good in cup competitions, aren't you? So there's that as well.
We're good in small league formats. We went 100% in the League Cup this year in our first ever appearance in that format. So we've only been in the group stage of the League Cup once, and we've won every game. So that's a pretty solid record.
Would you take McKenzie as your manager? He's free and available now.
I tell you what, it's getting increasingly difficult to say that I won't take Barry Robson. As much as I keep trying to talk myself out of saying it. I don't know what else he will.
It's a trap. He's got to finish third.
But look at Gary O'Neill. It's going brilliantly for him.
That's what I'm coming to. Not a thing I've got wrong this season.
But yeah, good for the Dons. Less good for Hearts. Celtic have been going to win the league for a long time. Hearts could actually still fall out of the top six. If St Mirren, Hibs and Livingston all win and Hearts lose, and there's a 15-goal swing between Livingston and Hearts, then
it's not possible.
Yeah. So if Livingston, I think they're playing Dundee United. If they win they're playing St Johnston. So if Liverpool beat St Johnston 9-0.
Liverpool, Livingston.
Hey, Liverpool could beat St Johnston 9-0, to be fair. If Livingston beat St Johnston 9-0, and Ross County beat Hearts 6-0, they'll finish in the bottom six. Now, that would be quite funny. Hibs could finish in the bottom six as well, and that would be pretty disastrous for Lee Johnson.
As funny as it would be, I hope St Mirren fall at the top six, because we hear it every fucking season that they're pushing for top six, They're a top six side. No finishing in the top six in the last 40 years, for fuck's sake. So I'll love it on the last day of the regular season, if you will, before the split, that they fall into once again.
That sounds exactly like the Hearts chairman. Oh, we need some competition for third. It's too easy being Hearts. It's too easy finishing third every year. Fucking one top four finish in a decade, you cunts. Right. Moving on, I should also mention Graham Shinney got sent off against Ross County for what I thought was a pretty stonewall red card, and then Aberdeen have appealed it, and he now has a fourth match ban, and Aberdeen released a statement about 20 minutes before we came on, saying that they are, I think they said they're shocked at the decision of the SFA, and calling on them to open a new appeal, in disbelief, shock and disbelief by the appeal outcome, and despite the fact that SFA rules strictly prohibit them from discussing the decision publicly, because they've been accused of making a frivolous appeal, their supporters need to know that the club think it's grossly unfair and entirely untrue, and they publicly ask the SFA to urgently review the appeal with a new panel.
We'll get it on that.
I was going to say, that sounds like exactly the kind of approach that's going to get a good result. Graham Shinney will end up getting a fucking Mitrovic-esque eight-match ban at this rate. We won't have him for the split at all. Fucking stupid decision to appeal it.
Maybe he's on an appearance fee, so it's cheaper to put the appeal in. Get an extra game. Don't have to worry
about it down
the road.
Absolutely. Oh, well, that's the Dons. That's Dunfermline. Moving on to the Champions League. Chelsea 0, Real Madrid 2.
Of course, Champions League participation so important to all of the big clubs in Europe, Chelsea being one of them. This is the only route into the competition next season, but Rodrigo skipped in behind Chalobah. He's got Benzema up with him. He's got Vinicius too. It falls here to Vinicius Jr. It's squared out to Rodrigo.
A really tough night for Chelsea and Frank Lampard. Who would have thought putting N'Golo Kante in your front three is unlikely to lead to more goals than one of the several million pounds worth of wingers you've got on your bench in Sterling and Mudrick? But there you go. At least Frank Lampard tried something new. Fair play to him. Not a great deal to say about this. Classic Chelsea. Good for 60 minutes, in inverted commas, but without actually scoring any goals, and then they lose the game. So, what the fuck's the point? And they got battered by Brighton at the weekend as well. Rested half the team for the Madrid game, which didn't work. Really, Frank Lampard becomes the first Chelsea manager in 118 years, i.e. ever, to lose his first four games as manager.
It's the first time the club have lost four games in a row since 1993. It's not really a good night for Frank. 1995, sorry. Not as bad as I thought.
He's kind of undo it. He should have just steered well clear of this. Is he in danger of, you know, tarnishing his legacy somewhat? I mean, given that this is the second time round.
I think he's decimating any chance he's got of being a football manager.
Oh,
I think he might get sacked.
That's for sure.
Imagine getting a 9-game contract and not seeing it out.
This is really bad.
Yeah, it's about as bad as it gets, because obviously we never thought they'd realistically lay a glove on Real Madrid, but. The score was only 2-1, but it could have been about 10. One because of a horrendous deflection. It's just like they're just getting absolutely outplayed all over. They got beat by Wolves before.
Yeah, Wolves. Yeah. Brighton as well. Brighton had what, 26 shots?
Yeah, if it wasn't for
Kepa, nine saves.
Yeah, if it wasn't for Kepa, it would have been really
post twice.
Embarrassing. And it was embarrassing, but you mean like the scoreline, just by looking at the scoreline, you would be able to tell it was embarrassing. So yeah, I think they're in Man United territory now, where there's no joined up thinking whatsoever. No. Even between, you know, Frank and his team selection, doesn't seem to make any sort of sense.
What on earth do they do for the last five games? Like, it's genuinely conceivable that they lose all five. They're playing Brentford this weekend. I can't see how they can beat Brentford. They've definitely still got Man United to play. I have a feeling that they've still got Man City to play. And possibly Arsenal, which was fucking stinking five games.
Yeah, I think I should have seen their run of games, and it didn't make for pretty reading for a Chelsea supporter, because, you know, none of them are particularly winnable games.
They're not winnable games when they were playing and they had something to play for and there was a point of them being on the pitch. Now there's like absolutely no point in any of them being there, and they're unwinnable games. So it could get really genuine. So they've got Brentford, Arsenal, Bournemouth, Nottingham Forest, Man City, Newcastle, and a Man United game to get slotted in, so that hasn't been scheduled yet. So they are playing City, Arsenal, United, Newcastle on the last day, who could be going for a Champions League spot. I think Nottingham Forest on the 13th of May. That might be the only win, or the only non-defeat, and they might draw 0-0 because neither team can score any goals. We've got a friendly lined up against Brighton on the 23rd of July, so that'll be nice.
Who's the manager going to be?
Apparently Nagelsmann was in Chelsea's board flew out to speak to Nagelsmann, and they've approached Bayern Munich to discuss a compensation package. How Nagelsmann managed to get himself sacked but remain tied to Bayern Munich. It's like that's Harry Kane level of having a bad
the old game. The old gardening leaves.
Ah,
the
gardening
leaves. Yeah, way a decent gardening like you're shite. But I mean, again, if we can be serious for a second, if you're Nagelsmann, you're going to be looking at it and be like, "Yeah, I'm not so sure that this is the job for me," you know, because yeah, you'll probably get a fair whack to spend in the transfer budget, but. It's not about bringing players in that's necessarily the problem. It's getting rid of them.
Mm.
And even then, you know, what are you necessarily left with? And this is like a team that's still got Romelu Lukaku to come back into it, given the fact that his second spell at Inter has not really worked out. But he could end the season with a Champions League medal, to be fair. But that would be very unjust, considering he's not scored a goal from open play. Since the first game of the season.
He'll fit right in at Chelsea then.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so he'll be right at home. But again, the squad is due to swell even more before it starts to shrink. And Nagelsmann's just like, nah, you're all right, I'll wait. Because you don't want another. You will have seen, he probably, again, given the fact that relatively speaking, Potter was quite young, like maybe sees a bit of himself in Potter and be like, nah, this is not really, you'll be told you're going to get time. You're going to be told that, you know, it's a project. And then as soon as results go a bit further south than Bowley would like, he will still bin you nevertheless. So nothing's really changed from the Abramovich sacking spree. But again, he never went through two managers in one season. So
never mind three, which we might be on to.
Exactly. So, and he would always have someone lined up in the interim.
Well, like quite often, didn't really sack managers like close to an end of a season. You know, even Conte, who was an absolute disaster the last time we finished 10th, was the second season under Conte, and he was given till the end. The year before Conte, where we finished 10th, it was seen through to the end. So it's Abramovich tended to, you know, Ancelotti in his second spell as well, seen it through to the end, knowing he was going to go. It makes you wonder more and more what the fuck the point in sacking Graham Potter was, because it's been a total disaster since. And Potter was actually quite good in the Champions League, battered AC Milan twice in the group stage, who now find themselves in the semi-final, dispatched Borussia Dortmund, who at the time had won, 10, 11 games in a row to propel themselves to the top of the Bundesliga. So Potter seemed to have a bit of an knack for it in the Champions League, which was all we had left to play for. And I've seen a report in The Athletic that Frank Lampard has done no specific tactical training with any of the teams since he's come back in. He's focused on morale and speaking to the players individually. And you're like, that's because he's got no fucking tactical training to give to anybody. The fact that the team couldn't score any goals, and what we think the solution is literally a vibes guy to sit them all down. And apparently he was focusing on trying to remind them that they're good players. And I was like, I can't help think that these guys must sit there and be like, no, I know I'm good. You just bought me for £120 million. Like, I just won the World Cup. Like, I'm as good as I could possibly be. I know I'm good. That's not the problem. The problem is that you don't tell me what the fuck to do, and everybody around me runs around like headless chickens. That's the problem. Not that I don't think I'm any good.
This has got massive Jake Humphries high performance vibes about it. I mean, that's exactly what it feels like at the moment. It's all buzzwords and catchy phrases, but there's no substance to it whatsoever. And like I said, if Frank Lampard's not given, Frank Lampard doesn't necessarily need to be the tactics guy as long as he's got some tactical guys in his coaching staff. So that's absolutely fine. But it doesn't appear to be the case that there's.
Well, I doubt Ashley Cole's one of them.
Well, he apparently he's highly regarded, but I don't know if that's in terms of on the coaching, on the training field, or as a tactician yet. Well, I guess it's not been proven because he's only done what, England under 19s or something like that. That's where he was, that level he was at the moment. That's not a confusing thing. You're bringing in coaching staff on the interim for 9 games as well. So I don't want to repeat myself because I repeat myself often enough on this podcast. It's all arse backwards. You know what I mean? You're putting the foundations in place, and then you've already bulldozed them over, and it doesn't make much sense whatsoever. I just can't wrap my head around it. Like I said, just give Potter to the end of the season, and then if he has enough rope to hang himself, then he's hung himself rather than this.
They seem to be out quickly to get to, because they were worried about, it seemed like they went quickly because Nagelsmann came available. That seemed to be what it was. And the initial reports were, you know, he'll be in, you know, Potter was out on Monday and Nagelsmann will be in by Thursday, but that hasn't come to fruition at all. It's almost like they didn't realise he was actually still attached to Bayern Munich and that they were going to have to pay Bayern Munich.
Well, it's not like this Chelsea regime to make an administrative oversight like that.
Yeah, he's been sacked, we'll have him. What do you mean we need to pay somebody else?
Whoa, wait a fucking minute here. I thought he was like, you know, a free agent, but there's no such thing as a free agent in football. It's just, again, it's, they're trying to act quickly, but again, they've got a touch of the Man United post-Fergie here where it's like, oh, this is what we're going to do, blah, 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 and then they actually go to do it and all of a sudden it's not as easy as they first thought. Again, we've talked about at length about Bowley's perceived naivety. I mean, you know, asking James Corden, who I'm pretty sure is a West Ham supporter has opinion on who the next Chelsea, and a try-hard into the bargain, but asking him and his opinion on any matter, never mind a football, how you should run your football club that you've just purchased for many, many billions of pounds, and then spent many, many millions of pounds on players after that, is truly ridiculous. So I don't know where Chelsea go from here, really, and I don't know if there's a manager out there that would really be suited at this moment in time, given how the fact they've just sacked a so-called project manager is going to turn off all the other so-called project managers, and you know it's a big task at hand here.
At least Nagelsmann could show up with some medals. I guess that might impress the players a bit more than Potter had. But it is strange. And now I genuinely don't understand what happens for the rest of these games this season, because why anybody... You've got the only hope is that some of the players are playing to put themselves in a shop window, you know, maybe a Ziyech or somebody if they get a chance for their next job, or they're playing for the new manager. But if they're on the brink of Nagelsmann, which sounds like the case, just get him in now. At least he can work with the players on the pitch and assess who he likes and who he doesn't like. And you know, the season's over, isn't it? So
He can take the training, and Frank can fuck up on the Saturday. I mean, that's the way to go to the end of the season, to be honest. Because yeah. I don't think if you're Nagelsmann, you want to be touching this.
Right, you don't want to be a part.
No,
you don't want these games on your CV.
You want to be sitting in the stand watching it, knowing that it's your job in the summer.
What do you call it? A consultant for 9 matches, uh-huh. And then take over properly after the season's finished.
Yeah, quite possibly. We should move on to the Premier League then. Manchester City 3, Leicester City 1.
De Bruyne is weak from Ndidi. De Bruyne has tried on. Ndidi tries to get back for Haaland. He's in. The inevitable happens. The inevitable celebration.
Erling Haaland scoring there for City as they rolled to a 3-1 victory against Leicester. A prime example of XG not telling the whole story when you look at it in one game, because Leicester coming out of that with as the XG victors. But probably a case of Man City being so far ahead so quickly that they could largely take their foot off the gas. Pretty comprehensive victory to script there, Mike. And City just doing what City do after Christmas and looking ominous.
Yeah, I think they've won 8 of the 10 games in the league since the end of the transfer window there, which shows you, yep, they're on. And Martin Taylor said it's inevitable what Haaland does. I think it's inevitable that City will go on to win the treble because of the strength. I think the only hurdle in their ways now is Real Madrid in the Champions League. Should they overcome Bayern Munich tomorrow, of course, but that looks like it's fairly done and dusted already. So, set it again, and it's really hard to see how anybody could touch them at this moment in time.
One team struggling to touch them, although having the league still entirely in their hands as well, is Arsenal, who threw away a 2-goal lead as Saka missed a penalty at 2-1 against West Ham.
Saka!
It was a poor, poor penalty, Sheila, by Saka, and he's become quite ruthless this season and almost depicted sort of where Arsenal's season going in that one moment. They could have been forgiven almost for letting the 2-goal lead slip against Liverpool last weekend, but it's pretty unforgivable to do the same thing against a reasonably poor West Ham team.
I've always said they're a good West Ham team. I was always worried about West Ham in terms of them coming good.
You were worried about them being too good, not going down. But I was going to say, Sheila, is although it is still in Arsenal's hands, technically, that after that game, it very much feels like it's in Man City's hands, and that Arsenal kind of needs something to go their way in a City game to get control again.
They do, and again, even beyond that, you do feel that there are going to be more tougher moments for Arsenal than there will be for City, who have been there and done it. where is this Arsenal team? Is it as good as Arteta is in a tactical sense? You know, they have at times run on vibes, especially after, you know, the games against, I think, Man United. He was very animated in the late win against Bournemouth. Same again, like you felt like something was happening, but it was the opposite in this, where he was frustrated, looked a bit forlorn. And again, the difference between the sort of talent that they can bring off the bench between City and Arsenal, I think, is obviously coming to fruition now as well. Arsenal, yes, they let the two-goal lead slip, but when it came to, right, well, let's try and get ahead again after the penalty miss, Trossard comes on, who's obviously a very good player and a very welcome addition to the side. But after that, you've got Jesus coming off for Nketiah and Martinelli coming off for Reece Nelson. It's like, right, well, here's where the title is going to be won and lost, where City can bring off their Haaland at half-time, and then they bring on World Cup winner Julian Alvarez, who's obviously very talented in his own right. And if, say, Haaland was to break his leg tomorrow, they would still have a world-class striker to come in and fill his position. And that's you can say that for pretty much every position in City's team, which you can't say that for Arsenal. And this is it. They're just going to run out of steam. But I'm sure, like, today Rio Ferdinand said that if Man United were to finish where they are and win a trophy, they would have had a better season than Arsenal, who, you know, might... But if Arsenal don't win the league, and I think it's important to remember that Arsenal are still ahead of schedule here, where, well, maybe not ahead anymore. Well, ahead in the sense that they're challenging for the title, but not in the sense that they're in the top four and, like, solidly in the top four. Because last year was, they just missed out on it. Next year they'll definitely be back in the Champions League and maybe able to attract the caliber of player that will see them title challengers for the years to come, as opposed to just once in what is now a blue moon. But so they're still
as difficult as it is to challenge for the league, and this league's by no means over, but this doesn't feel like we compare them to Leicester a lot, which is silly because it's obviously different, but I mean, they're not like a Leicester, and this by no means feels like a one-off. It doesn't feel like this is Arsenal's only chance and they'll disappear.
And again, you know, that Leicester season, it was every big side had a calamitous season, whereas City are not having a calamitous season. They're just as good as they've always been. And Arsenal have to have a near-perfect season in order to beat that. You know, ask Jurgen Klopp what it takes to beat City to a title, and... It just goes points. To show that 99 points, yeah, at least you need to be more or less perfect. You can't afford to even draw a couple of games, never mind lose or throw away two-goal leads with any sort of regularity.
Well, I think Arsenal could still finish on 95 points.
Which is astonishing. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I reckon sort of Pep, that would have won you the league in pretty much every other year. So most seasons, yeah. So...
I think there was one Chelsea Mourinho season that was about 94, 95.
I was going to say maybe Conte as well. Did Conte not have a...
Yeah, I think Conte's season was pretty big.
Very, very rare.
I think maybe one of the Fergie... I think there was one particularly good Fergie season. But yeah, generally, it was sort of early to mid-80s that was winning your league. Not 95.
85 points, yeah, would do you. And you would know, you'd be there or thereabouts. But City are so good. That it's just nearly impossible to do it. And again, when you're still, relatively speaking, limited resources compared to Man City, it's just that it's still.
Well, their game changing players have been Man City's offcuts, haven't they?
that's true. You're exactly right. And Zinchenko was missing for the West Ham game. Maybe his kind of influence to be able to calm things down and put his foot on the ball, although he got torn a new arsehole by Trent the game before. But you reckon this is the game where he can... Because this is what... City, when City win the league, their games aren't won... The league titles aren't won and lost against the sort of their title challengers. It's just been ruthless against the rest of the teams. They don't ever look like they're likely to lose games, certainly not throw them away from winning positions.
Well, this is an Un-City thing to do, isn't it? Because even when they drop points, like... you know, the last season against Southampton or Palace or whatever, it tends to be something weird happens where they just can't score and then the other team get a late goal, like Brentford, or they get a player sent off for a sort of freak dog so early on or something like that. Whereas you never see City, certainly not twice in a row, but you never see City have a two-goal lead and throw that away against inferior opposition. They completely kill the game at that point.
That's the key point. They kill it, and that's something Arsenal don't have in their arsenal as of yet. Because I think they need to be like an Arteta side the first half and like a Wenger side the second half, whereas they just end up shoehorning it around the opponent's box, kind of just passing and moving. Because I think that's what Pep's sides are best at. When they go 1-0 up, of course they'll score multiple goals, but that's when they just kill the game, and it's just passing for passing's sake in a sense, and just looking for that incisive pass, and that's when the second and the third goal comes. Whereas Arsenal are a bit more direct, and that's where they're getting a lot of their joy at the moment. So it's almost like you'd prefer Arsenal to go 2-0 down in games than go 2-0 up in games at the moment, because they're suited to play that kind of way. Whereas, yeah, like I said, you could probably forgive the Liverpool game, because as you've seen Liverpool at Anfield this season, are outrageous scoring force, even though they're a bit slack in other areas. Whereas, yeah, you don't think David Moyes was going to mastermind a 2-0 comeback, was it? So, and Saka did miss a penalty. Like, moments like that do matter in games. If you go 3-1 up there, that's potentially the end of it. But obviously that swings the momentum back to West Ham. And even the goal that Arsenal conceded, that second goal, the Bowen goal, was just slack defending more so than anything as well. And I think that's the bit of a worry. Arsenal are giving up chances now, and Ramsdale's having to bail them out of the shit quite a lot. This season is very reminiscent of him playing for like Bournemouth or Sheffield United now at the moment, rather than playing for a top four side where he has to be quiet most of the games and just pick up moments. He's been called into action quite a lot at present.
Yeah, it's what we said earlier in the season, isn't it? That Arsenal were conceding far more chances than any other previous league winners had done, and there's always a risk that catches up with you eventually. And individual errors. Gabriel for the penalty, sort of half sliding in, half pulling out and clattering him, and then Ramsdale trying to make the save, but actually also making a bit of a pig's ear of that against Bowen as well. But moving on to the most informed, or maybe most surprisingly informed team in the league, Aston Villa won 3-0 at the weekend.
He's got the better of targets, slipping it in for Buendia. Rams it in again.
Aston Villa 3, Newcastle United 0. And Mike, they weren't just value for this win. They absolutely battered Newcastle. First team to beat them by 3 goals this season. They'd only lost by more than once one other time. But well and truly outplayed for literally the entirety of this match.
Ah, you hate to see a Eddie Howe side get battered, don't you, Jamie? I think just the confidence that they're playing with at the moment is exceptional, and Watkins is obviously in tremendous form. I think he's keeping up goal-scoring-wise with Haaland in this calendar year. And it's not a fluke by any means. Obviously, Watkins is only like one of 3 players, I think, in the last 3 seasons to score 10 or more Premier League goals with Kane and Salah. So he's always found the back of the net, whether it was at Brentford in the Championship that got him his move to Villa as well. But I think Emery, of course, being a better, being more of the tactical mindset, being more of a Pep or an Arteta than a Frank Lampard, has given him a new lease of life through the middle as a main striker. And the runs he makes has been exceptional. And when they've played onto a plate like that for him, then of course he's going to score more often than not. So happy to see Emery actually succeeding with Villa at the moment. You just worry that they're exceeding expectations and also outperforming their metrics as well. They could probably hang on until the end of the season and probably get a European berth, which we know what Emery's like in the Europa League. But you wonder if that cools off in the next year, and maybe that's where you get the true kind of level of where Villa are probably at as a club at the moment.
They're not a skint side, though, and they will spend money, in which will allow Emery to bring in players of his own. Like, considering after the international break, they were 10th. They were 11th and Chelsea were 10th. And we were saying that was the two teams with nothing to play for. And all of a sudden, Villa are 6th. And they're only 3 points behind Spurs in 5th. albeit they could get overtaken by Brighton, is genuinely incredible. Shea Gibbons said before the game that Emery had turned down Newcastle, but I bet they wouldn't be disappointed. But he knows that Newcastle fans wouldn't be disappointed because they've now got Eddie Howe instead of Emery, which was an upgrade, which was made to look a little bit silly. 90 minutes later, Newcastle, Sheila, they had looked like they had sort of turned a corner from their funny run of bad form, but an uncharacteristically bad day at the office for them, and by no means solidified in that Champions League spot.
No, definitely not. But they're under the radar now. And I think we discussed this with sort of, or touched on the similar sort of point with Gary a couple of weeks ago, that, you know, there's no pressure really on Newcastle to do anything anywhere close to where they are now. I think if they were to finish, if you'd offered them eighth at the start of the season, they'd probably be quite comfortable with that. But now here they are challenging for the Champions League, and they're under the microscope, particularly because it's, you know, a tight race. And this is with that comes pressure. And I don't know if Eddie Howe has ever been under that kind of pressure. Certainly not at this end of the table, maybe down the other end. But we'll see really what he's got in the locker to see if he can, you know, push on and actually secure that Champions League finish. But this game was a chance for Emery to get himself in the shop window for maybe a couple of years down the line when, you know, our prediction final does come true and the Saudis lose patience with Mr. Howe. So we'll see. Yeah, we'll be right in the end, gents.
Yeah, if we wait long enough, he will get sacked. Like, that is definitive. Like, everybody gets sacked. Pep will be the only manager that doesn't get sacked in this current crop of Premier League managers. Everybody else at some point will go, even Klopp. But no, interesting to see Villa, and it is good. And you know, Emery got a bit of a hard time for his first spell at Arsenal, so good to see him come back into the league and kind of show everybody what he's about as well. Rio having a silly rant about the fact, basically suggesting that he always knew he was a good manager and it was everybody else that was an idiot. It's classic.
Wise words from Rio Ferdinand.
Yeah, he said, what was it he said in the Champions League stuff tonight? He said, it was with AC getting into the semi-finals. If you ask absolutely anyone to rank the leagues, none of them would have the Italian league anywhere near the top. Wouldn't have it anywhere near the top. And that's them got one, probably two teams in the Champions League semi-finals. That just shows you how knockout football works. I was like, what is nowhere near the top? Surely 95% of people are going one of La Liga and the Premier League in either order. And then Italy, and maybe the Bundesliga. So switching those two around, like it's clearly a top four in the whole world league. Like
they'd be in the semi-finals of the top leagues.
Yeah, exactly. They're exactly where they're meant to be. Yeah. Rio sat there like, wow, you've got England, Spain, Germany, France, what Portugal, Norway.
I'm intrigued to know what like Rio thinks the actual standard of Italian football is. Like they're just like Diddy's just jobbers, complete jobbers.
They just won the fucking Euros, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. Again, yeah, like didn't qualify for the World Cup right enough, but nevertheless, like, you know, they've got some pretty tasty players in that league. So again,
Roma won the conference last season. Fiorentina are favourites for the conference this season.
Again, yeah, like 50% of the Champions League semi finalists are probably going to be Italian. What does he think goes on in Italy? I can tell you right now, he's not watched a Serie A game in a very long time.
This season,
I can tell you now.
Absolutely.
That 7-0 against Roma all those years ago when he played for Man United. That's what he's living off. That's his only excuse for the Italian football.
Well, his only reference to how good the Italian league was the fact that he had seen AC Milan at Stamford Bridge and they got battered by Chelsea. And that was six months ago, so that probably suggests what the extent of
isn't the managers the most managers to win the Premier League? Are they not? Is it not
Italian? Yeah. There's loads of Italians, isn't there?
Yeah, what are the Italians? Come on, no. Italians,
idiots, all of them, absolute idiots. Moving from the top of the top end of the Premier League to the bottom end.
Oh, Solanke, could there be a chance here for Bournemouth? It's a chance for Watara! Absolutely incredible! Dungo Watara with his first goal for Bournemouth! And he surely won it for the Cherries in the 5th minute of stoppage time.
Incredible scenes at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium with Bournemouth winning there. When I first heard that commentator, I thought he was Scottish. Sounds like he was, oh, Solanke. But turns out that's not what he said at all. I was like, brilliant, I love this guy. And then he kept talking, he wasn't Scottish. And I also thought he said, don't you know Otara, but he was actually just trying to pronounce the guy's first name. So commentator needs to work on his enunciation a little bit for me. But sensational victory by Bournemouth, having conceded in the 88th minute to a Dan Juma equaliser, ex-Bournemouth player, with his first goal for Tottenham, to go up the other end in the 95th minute and snatch the victory, which, judging by the highlights, they thoroughly deserved. It's pretty incredible. Mike, you quite rightly said that Gary O'Neill would be a phenomenal appointment for Bournemouth. You're absolutely spot on with that. He seems to have guided them to all but safety now, you would say, with that victory.
Yes, I've been proven right once again. Of course, my expert picks. It's a surprise, the rough form that Bournemouth have been on. They do show signs of being a decent side without probably having the overall quality of some of our teams down at that end of the table. But no, you've got to commend them, considering Scott Parker basically said, this is pish, and this team's going down, so I'm out of here. And then to give it to, obviously, the assistant, and work a bit. I think they were bottom at the start of March, and he's to stop a slide in.
They were bottom at the start of March?
I believe so. I might be wrong. I might have to check that, in fact, check that back. But I believe that is the case. So for him to address a slide when they're at the wrong end of the table and to basically be safe now, I think it's going to take an extreme set of circumstances for them to go down now. It's very commendable. And it's potentially manager of the year candidate stuff, because I think most, if not all, pundits would have Bournemouth somewhere in that bottom three at the start of the season. And when they started off poorly, like the 9-0 against Liverpool, for example, they thought there was absolutely going to be no hopers. We thought this maybe would be another Norwich, or not as extreme as a Derby, for example, but yeah, maybe another Norwich where they'd be cut adrift well before now. But not got to commend O'Neill on the job that he's done.
Yeah, absolutely. They're on an absolutely terrific run of form. 3 wins in the last 4, but they just don't draw games either. They're kind of like, they're picking up those important wins. You know, the 2-1 win against Fulham, this 3-2 win here, which is, when you're in a relegation fight, it's wins that you need. And they're picking up wins on the road as well. You know, that's 2 wins away from home in a row against Leicester and Tottenham, which will give the team tremendous confidence as well. Like we say, it looks like that might have lifted them out, puts them 6 points clear of the drop. Below them, West Ham, who we've discussed. And then really, it's looking like we've kind of reduced it to 5. It was a sort of bottom 15 at one point, but now it's a bottom 5 of Leeds on 29, Everton on 27, Forest on 27, Leicester on 25, Southampton on 23. Southampton now the first team, I think, for 5 or 6 weeks that can't get themselves out of the relegation zone with 1 win. Sheila, they, in the way that Bournemouth looked, have just they're only just above that lot, but have just maybe done enough now to pull themselves away. It's looking pretty dark for Southampton, being 4 points adrift at the bottom this late on when they're not picking up points.
Yeah, because there's been a fair amount of teams involved in it. Four points is a lot, because you just feel like not all of them is going to drop points at the same time. And so it's kind of Southampton are sort of masters of their own disaster, really. I think they had you know, they had Hasenhüttl, binned him off, and didn't really have a suitable replacement. They've got, what's his name again? What's his size? Selles, sorry.
Oh, you're missing the interim periods between Hasenhüttl and Selles.
Oh, yeah, again. Oh, fuck, I completely forgot Nathan Jones. the Nathan Jones experiment.
Christ, that's a lifetime ago.
Yeah, it does feel like it. I mean, and again, that was really the crux of the matter as to whether Southampton are going to get relegated. To go from Ralf Hasenhüttl, who is a respectable Premier League manager, to Nathan Jones, who seems to have a problem with tennis, tennis tables. and it was not like I remember when we've discussed this before, but it was not like a culturally significant
it had been donated to them
to
cheer up the players.
Took an axe to it within 5 minutes of being in the door. But
I don't know if he still is, but he was also favourite for the Hearts job when Nielsen initially got sacked, which would be absolute fucking gold if he ended up at Tynecastle.
He'd done a reverse Heckingbottom. You can't be doing that, really. In the Duncan Ferguson sense of the word, you can't be doing that. You can't be getting rid of guys like Hasenhüttl, who you know what you get. You might get humbled 9-0 every now and again, but more often than not, he's going to get you more points than you need for safety. So, and for Southampton, that's the objective, really. And then to get rid of him, to go to Nathan Jones, to go to Selles, who, it's been a bibs and cones guy, as Mike would put it, for the vast majority of his career. He does have the most intense stare I've noticed in the Premier League. He looks like he could stare like a hole through you. I wouldn't want to get on the wrong side of him. Like, if he looks at you long enough, your head will explode. I've never seen him blink. I've never seen a man blink. I think maybe his eyes are drawn onto his eyelids. He has to close his eyes because some of the football he's playing or watching his team play is horrendous. But I think they're too far adrift now. Especially when you're sort of, I know Everton are shite, but they're still capable of picking up a point here and there, whereas I just don't know where Southampton's are going to come from, really.
News that came out of St Mary's this week as well was that James Ward-Prowse will be allowed to leave if they get relegated.
That's good news. I don't think he doesn't go for much either.
I could see him going for like 20-25 mil.
That's what I was thinking as well.
Which in this market is, he's not, I think he's what, 27,
28?
Yeah. He's been doing well, to be fair, yeah.
In this market, that's cheap. I seen somebody suggest that if Declan Rice does leave West Ham, he would be a sensible purchase for West Ham.
I think he'd be a sensible purchase for Newcastle, if I'm being perfectly honest. I could see him going in there and being an improvement on the likes of Longstaff for just as a kickoff. I think a lot of teams would be, or even like, I'm without maybe straying at the realms of ridiculous, I think even a Spurs could do with someone like him.
Yeah, but he'd be pissed
like
for Spurs.
Him at the moment.
He screams,
of course he would be, because everyone's pissed for Spurs.
He'd just turn into Oliver Skip if he went to Spurs.
but I just think that's a kind of more sensible signing they could make.
About Spurs that I kind of forgot. If Harry Kane leaves, and there's every chance Son could leave as well, and he's certainly not as good as he was, they'll be leading the line with Richarlison, who hasn't scored a league goal this season.
Oh, but he has got two bookings for celebrating this season.
Yeah,
they've got chopped up for that.
At the start, very early on in the season, we spoke about Darwin Nunez's headbutt to goals ratio not being very good. Richarlison's taking his shirt off to goals ratio is currently an absolute disgrace. Taking his shirt off twice, goals none.
we've went on a tangent back to giving Spurs a good slagging, but
Always time.
There's always time for that. Yep, I'm sure we'll come on to it in a bit anyway. But all right, Southampton. I don't know if they've even. Did we see them coming back up?
It depends if they get in, doesn't it? Yeah, they can't. They're not going to come back up with Subin Reles, that's for sure. They might get Nathan Jones back. He's got a good record in the Championship.
Just the last thing I'd say, I think their squad is probably actually suited for a Championship in terms of
young players.
They're good young players, so they probably adjust.
It depends again who they quickly. Keep, doesn't it? Because you imagine Lavia will probably be away.
How many do you want from that squad? Like you said, Lavia, Ward-Prowse.
The linchpins of their squad will be quite content, I think, to stay.
Probably get himself another Premier League gig.
Yeah, probably to a team coming up, so I would have thought.
Or Palace, maybe. He seems very Palace-y.
Yeah, he does seem a bit Palace-y.
Like fun. They love fun fullback. I always just think of Jeffrey Schlupp and that he's the best name in the Premier League. So, I just associate them with fun fullbacks because of Schlupp. So they could have Kyle Walker-Peters and Jeffrey Schlupp next season. Under Roy, free-flowing Roy.
Imagine Roy stays in our season, man.
Was his contract? Was his contract just to the end?
Just to the end of the season. It had to be just to the end of the season. Come on.
Having said that, though, it's bizarre to think that, you know, Crystal Palace have made a shrewder interim manager than what Chelsea appointed.
Oh, by miles.
If Chelsea
they're going to finish above Chelsea.
Exactly. But like, if Chelsea had went out and been like, "We're going to get Roy Hodgson to the end of the season," I think that would have been quite a respectable thing to do. I mean, we slagged.
Fuck off. If they'd done that, everybody would have bounced out laughing.
No, they would. More so than Frank Lampard. I can't believe a man who has Frank Lampard as the manager of his team is turning his nose up at Roy Hodgson. They haven't lost four games in a row in what was it, their entire ever. Existence ever. They haven't. They've scored one goal, which was a wicked deflection, and God knows how many hours of football in five games. So, yeah, you're going to turn your nose up.
Not turn your nose up. I'm just Roy saying Hodgson. That society would have turned their nose up. If Chelsea had said
we've sacked society would have been proven wrong, as we were. Whereas everyone knew, including us, knew that this Frank Lampard, not even an experiment, we all knew how it was going to go. It's not an experiment. We knew it was going to be shite. Would go. So, aye. You know, Palace, done well, Palace. Good job, Palace.
Palace did. I don't even know how we got onto Palace. They're not anywhere.
That's because Walker-Peters, Sloot, Hodgson, Chelsea.
Yeah, makes perfect sense.
Has Roy Hodgson got as many wins at Palace this time around as he did with Watford last season? It must be close.
Yeah. Well, he's won three on the bounce since going in, hasn't he?
I'm pretty sure he'll win three at Watford. Pretty sure it's something dire.
He's an incredible.
Did he beat? Solskjaer's Man United. Have I made that up? I know that Watford definitely did beat.
That's when Harry Maguire got sent off. But I think that's pre-Roy, is it not?
That was that pre-Roy.
Yeah, because the Harry Maguire getting sent off against Watford, was that 4-1? 4-0?
4-1? 4-0.
Yeah, aye.
And that was shortly after Harry Maguire had done the fingers and the ears against Albania.
Yeah.
And then gets himself sent off.
Roy's exceeded the record. They only won two games at Watford.
Jesus, good man. At least he gets to go out on a high again. Just don't fucking come back. If you've retired this time, you're fucking retired, right? You've kept Palace up.
He told you he's the Ric Flair of the Premier League. He's never going to retire.
Your legacy is done.
Now, every time he comes back, it's going to be worse than it was the previous time. Except this time when it was better, but
they should just do either that, or he should do a Jim Leishman / Craig Brown. And get like a poxy job in the boardroom at the club that he's associated with and just go and sit and watch the games on the stands. If he has to be at Palace, just give him like a, what's the name of the role at Cowdenbeath, Mike? Like director of operations?
Football coordinator.
Or he could be on the football monitoring board.
Yeah, exactly. Put Roy on the football monitoring board and just let him watch the games.
Very dismissive of Roy, but I think we need to take our hats off to him because what age is he now? 104.
Thereabouts.
But to be fair, like he's he can still cut the mustard in the Premier League. All right, not for any sustained period of time, but how many other managers of his age can come into football in the modern age?
Kicking about the town in his full gear.
Yeah,
he was at
a four-way crossing. Where the fuck is Roy? Where's Roy? Who let Roy wander off?
Roy's walking to work and he's already changed.
He's just wandered off. We need to find them, bring them back.
It's just vibes though as well, isn't it? Because he's just got the boys playing nice attacking football. He's not changed too much.
The foundations with all worked with all the players before. But again, even so, to come in at this level at his age, and still being able to hang. All right, he won't be able to go for any great length of time, but I think we've been rather disrespectful towards Roy on this podcast, because there won't be many managers of his age that are able to evolve and still be able to go at this stage in their careers. They've probably fizzled out, had a meltdown, or go be manager of,
or done the sensible thing and fucking retire.
Yeah, these boys are always fucking middling around the Championship team or fucking MK Dons or something like that.
I mean, Neil Warnock's just doing the Championship jobs.
Yeah, so
he's keeping Huddersfield up as well. So that's the two old generation. He also rates going about in full kit. He was seen cycling around in his full Middlesbrough gear, wasn't he?
Oh yeah,
in a house in his estate.
To be fair, his wardrobe is probably just chock full of tracksuits for the various clubs he's managed. He's not got any normal cutting about the house clothes. He's just got old tracksuits.
He's like that boy that used to show up to football training with a different full kit every single week. That's absolutely Neil.
Yeah, it's just Neil.
Right, we ended up on Palace, which we weren't meant to, because I've put them out of the relegation fight. But it was nice to discuss Roy. Anyway, I was just going to touch on the fact that Leicester, Forest, Everton, Leeds, pick two of them. Mike, I don't really know why we're doing this now, but I've decided this is a good way to finish off. But what the two? I think Leeds are going to tumble and end up going with Forest. I think Leicester and Everton will see themselves safe.
Yeah, I think Everton, as Sheila said, there's enough in Dyche's team to pick up points where they might not pick up wins on a consistent basis. Forest and Southampton, I think I've said for a while now that they're away and yeah, I think it's going to be Leeds, as much as Avogadro had a wee impact at the start there. And as much as teams can get thumped up, Liverpool, of course, it's not the be-all and end-all. That was particularly poor on Monday night. And you do worry about morale. If you're already on your arse and then you get thumped as well, I don't think that's going to do much for your side. And I worry about them. Because it'd be a shame to see Leeds out the top flight again, to be honest. There are two. Well, I like Forest City Ground as well. But they're just a shambles, that club, at the moment, with an umpteen thousand signings. Southampton, they're just a non-entity at the moment. So yeah, I wouldn't be sorry to see them go. But yeah, I think it's gonna be one of five. It's gonna be three or five, sorry, isn't it?
Yeah, I think we're down to them, Sheila.
I think we're unanimous that Southampton are done at this point. It's not like they can, sack another manager and bring in a Roy Hodgson or a Sam Allardyce at this point. Because they're no longer available, really. But yep, they're down. I would say Forest. I'm not so sure about Forest. I still think they've got a good manager, and they're actually not bad at home, from what I understand. They're shambolic away, but they've got so many players that surely one of them's going to be decent enough to get them out of trouble. Who else is down there?
Three points Leeds. From their last 30, though, is...
That's shocking.
The run's quite harsh as well. Liverpool, Brighton, Brentford, Southampton, Chelsea, Arsenal, Crystal Palace, though.
There's a few teams on the beach there, though, isn't there? Your Brentford will be on the beach. Palace will be on the beach. Chelsea are on the beach.
But
Yeah, they're thousands.
For it, that's, yeah, you're probably right. And then
Taylor Navas getting relegated, that's fucking
mad. That's wild.
Yeah, but I think if he wasn't there, they would already have been even further.
I wonder if he gets a winner's medal in Ligue 1. First ever player to win Ligue 1 and get relegated from the Premier League in the same season.
That'd be wild.
Yeah. But he's turned out to be one of their...
He was sensational against Man United.
Absolutely sensational. Yeah, he was. Very, very unlucky. He conceded twice. But other than that, maybe you guys are right. I don't think... Maybe if they were playing a few more teams in and around them, they would have a chance. But that's a pretty horrendous... I don't think you could pick a worse run of games if you tried. And then Leeds, much like Mike says, it would be disappointing to see Leeds go out, but they haven't really they've not evolved at all since then they got back in. Yeah, they had that, their first season was okay because no one really knew what to expect, but they've never got any better from there, and it just got worse and worse. Teams have found them out that, you know, they're arguably,
is this their third season?
It is their third season. Yeah, they're easier to play now than they've ever been.
They have been a bit of a wet fish, haven't they?
Yeah. Well, even when Bielsa was there, they would probably get... There's a good chance they would get cuffed, but at least they would know they would have a go at it for 90 minutes. Yeah.
They finished 10th that first season, and then just narrowly avoided relegation last season.
Mm.
And then they're still in that relegation fight.
Maybe
a gear down, reset a bit, and come back.
Perhaps, but they don't even, like, last year, obviously, they had Rodrigo. Is it Rodrigo? Yeah. Not Rodrigo.
Rafinha.
Rafinha, that's the point I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
Rafinha, who, you know, was obviously their ace in the hole, that was definitely a level above the rest of the relegation fodder, and they haven't been able to get Rodrigo in the team consistently because he's been injured, never long-term injured, just short-term injured consistently. So that's really hurt their rhythm in the attacking sense. But defensively, they're all over the place. I mean, yeah, Liverpool were going great guns last night, but every goal was kind of similar in the fact that
Milly didn't make a save until the 95th minute. First six shots on target all went in.
Well, none of them were easy.
Wasn't there necessarily his fault?
No. But I know what you mean.
Still a nightmare, isn't it? You've got to save something.
You know what you mean? Like, you try and get your hand on one at least, but he never got near any of them. And that's the thing. They just were very naive after the, like, surely I think at some point you go into damage limitation mode and like, oh, that's not like that's more embarrassing than it is. I mean, it's not like Liverpool, Man United, where Man United can't just shut up shop and like make sure it doesn't get...
The goal difference is really important. So in the last two games, their goal difference has got worse by 9. So they now have minus 20. But Everton have minus 20. Forest have minus 32. And Leicester have minus 14. But so in that 9 games, they've ceded their goal difference advantage that they had over Everton, which was 9 goals, which was quite significant. And they had a 4-goal advantage over Leicester, which they've ceded as well. That's worth a point.
It is, because you don't fancy Everton to concede. You can fancy them to lose games, but you don't fancy them to concede that many. By one or two, make it difficult. Whereas Leeds, if they lose, it's going to be 2 or 3 at least, normally.
Yeah.
So I think... Leicester's got
a nice 3 games coming up as well. Wolves, Leeds and Everton.
Yeah.
They're all like six-pointers, of course.
So, yeah, they are. That's... Nice 3 games to have. That's 3 6-pointers there, really. So if Leicester can win all 3, I mean, I would rather have went into those 3 games with Brendan Rodgers as manager than Dean Smith, but that's neither here nor there. They are where they are. But I am going with, just line up with Mike, Southampton, Forest and Leeds to go down.
Is that what we've all said? Fucking hell. Interesting. Can't we ever agree on anything? Well, good place to end it, boys. what more do you want than that? It's been a thoroughly enjoyable chat. Nice to do a deep dive into the Pars at the beginning, and look forward to an exciting array of fixtures this weekend. Nothing sort of hugely exhilarating in the Premier League, but Premier League teams, you've obviously got Brighton, Man United in the semi-final of the FA Cup, is probably the standout fixture. of the weekend in England and Aberdeen against Rangers in the biggest game in Scotland this week. Not just this weekend. I mean, that is the biggest game in Scotland and it happens to be this weekend. So hopefully the mighty Dons can pull off a shock result against Rangers at the weekend, which would be nice because I feel like we've earned it. We've been playing very well under Barry, but certainly just seeing how he fares up will be interesting. It's been a pleasure, gents. Thank you both very much for your time. I'll speak to you both next week. Cheerio.